Hawkins.
And welcome in to this Saturday night. It is Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and we're here to play with yours. Your mind, that is, for a while. The mind can do strange things. Or is it the spirit or the consciousness of man that does some very strange things? Like leave the body altogether and go hither and yon. All over the planet, all over the galaxy, and into realms beyond. We're talking about the out-of-body experience, and of course, when we talk about that, we want to go to the expert. And one of our favorite guests on the show, Mr. Robert Monroe of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences in Virginia. Bob, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm still in body.
Well, I don't know about that. Not all the time, anyway.
Well, then I remember. I'm always in this backache body. You promised me, you see, Bob, that you would come out here and yank me out of body.
Well, no, that's not my job. I don't qualify for that. I'm having a hard enough time fighting a flu-type thing that somebody imported from California, and I don't know where it got imported from there.
It came from Taiwan.
I know, and it got over here somehow, and so if I sound rusty, I really am.
Well, you remember they had a 7.5 earthquake in Taiwan about 6 weeks ago. What comes around goes around.
I don't know how you control those things.
Well, I pity you because I had a little bout of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't be able to stay with us for the whole 3 hours.
You will listen to the difference in my voice and it'll crack all over the place, but we will try anyway.
All right. Well, we'll just love to have you along just as long as you can stay. In the research at the Institute, what new wonderful things have you and the explorers come up with?
Well, it depends on where you want to start in something like that. I think probably we have some of our most exciting areas these days is the fact that we are now beginning to put together the edges of what the human consciousness can and cannot do. And it's interesting because we don't see a particular limit to that.
There's no limit to human consciousness?
What it can do. Meaning, as far as all of the things that we have heard through man's history that human consciousness has done once, it can do twice. And if it can be done twice, we believe that it's learnable. And quite evidently it is.
That almost gives it a divine nature of some sort.
Well, we're not sure what it is. I don't know I would use the word divine, but it's one of those things that man has been approaching all these many years in our civilization, the concept that we will have to modify the earth or modify the environment. We're taking an interesting new approach. Modify man.
Well, man has been tried to modify man for a long time. Is man the source to modify man?
Well, that's the interesting part about it. We are beginning to gather together enough evidence to support that strong possibility. Not probability, but certainly possibility. I'm trying to figure out how man can control a flu bug right now.
And I'm trying to figure out how to control a backache.
Well,
I'll swap with you.
That's easier, believe me.
I've had that. You know, there's an interesting thing in what you say, in that we have said quite often that one of the great problems that man has in this world that he is living in right now is that he has allowed his spirituality to lag behind his technology. And now you're saying we need to change man. Maybe it is that spirituality or that consciousness that you're talking about.
Yes, if you can properly define or be very loose in your definition of spirituality. For example, let's take a very simple basic problem in human activity, and that's you have to eat.
From time to time.
Did you hear that?
Yes, you do.
You have to eat, all right. We have got some fairly significant conclusions that if one's consciousness is able to do it, and it looks like it might, that man could survive very comfortably by extracting all the nutrients he desires or needs out of a handful of rice each day or a handful of flour. All he has to do is to remember how to do it. And that's an interesting illustration of what I mean.
So he can control his own metabolism, as it were?
In essence, or the use of any matter to supply that metabolism. Theoretically, you could get down to the point, and I don't know this, but I see in theory, instead of having a handful of rice or a handful of wheat, conceivably he could take a handful of dirt and do the same thing.
So with his consciousness, then, he could make anything out of anything.
Yeah, ultimately, I presume that would be true.
So here again, we're getting back to a divine nature.
Well...
because I'm using the divine are the ones who can do those things which we would consider paranormal or impossible.
Well, we can.
So it's an archaic term indeed that I do use.
Well, we're gathered into we each are in our own belief system box, and if you begin to change that box, well, then certain things can be done. For example, let's talk about super strength, super physical strength.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some tests with that in changing one's belief system, one's consciousness, because you've read about it and it's happened many times that under certain types of emotionalism, certain types of stress, an individual, a little 90-pound woman, can lift a 1,000 or 2,000-pound car off of her baby who's underneath the car. It's been done many times.
Right.
We have have been able to replicate that type of effort within our laboratory.
At will?
At will.
And this is simply by training the consciousness?
Training the consciousness to be to know that can be done. Not believe it, but know it.
Well, we're so carefully taught in this society, Bob, that we can't do most anything.
You know our only concern about it?
What's that?
Was that a little 90-pound woman might break her bones by doing it.
Well, there is something to that. She's not made to do that as a, you know, she's not supposed to be a lift down at the filling station.
That's
for the
what
car.
It means. So it's interesting how these kinds of things, but if you extrapolate that, those fundamental building blocks of man's ability to totally control himself, then he doesn't have to worry about the environment.
But then we could take it a step further and a little old lady could fix her bones.
That's right. That, of course, is the next step. So this, these preliminaries that we're into are most interesting, and actually we are in the process of searching out gifted subjects who already know how to do that.
Or have already done it.
That's what I mean, who have already done it.
Well, I know a gentleman here, good friend of mine, who went through one of these experiences of superhuman strength. So he already knows that he can do that. He would be a good subject for
that.
That's
true, because once you know that you can do it, all you have to do is to set up that particular processing pattern within your consciousness, and you can replicate it. That seems to be what it is.
Are we tapping a new form of energy there, then, also, in order to do some things that require energy, like changing dirt into something that is nutritious for us?
I know it sounds very, very way out in the old-fashioned phrase, but this may well be a direction that man needs to go these days. And if we can begin to even just get one of those in place, it makes the next one that easier to do. You can see how that would happen. That if one can easily, by pushing a mental button, as it were lift 1,000 pounds, or have a total day's food supply and a handful of rice, it's very easy to do the next one because, what? You see, he's changing his belief system.
What about him pushing the button and getting rid of the Taiwan flu or this nagging backache?
I didn't say that I could do it.
Well, I'm just talking about...
That is true, of course.
That can be right there.
Of course it is. It all those types of things, that point of control of self would certainly include getting rid of the Taiwan flu. Unfortunately, I haven't gotten that capability, but it does infer that at a given stage, and I don't know when that is, but certainly we're going to find out step by step, that as an individual would learn these various processes, that somewhere along the way, by getting these various building blocks, there would be a great aha within that consciousness, and that aha is a better way or polite way of saying it, that consciousness would reach critical mass, and after that he would know how to do everything.
Well, now you're saying some very, very important things to us, and in a very, very interesting way. It dovetails with some of the more advanced discoveries that are being made in just physics laboratories.
Absolutely.
With the new kind of scalar interferometry that is the new thing in science.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because it is so closely interwoven to the human mind and to, we may want to call it the human consciousness. For that has been, that's one of our great interferometers.
Mm-hmm.
When we get back here in just a second, we want to look and see what kind of research you've been getting into, Bob, that has led you to the conclusion that you seem to be heading in that direction. I'm speaking to Bob Monroe, the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences in Virginia, and his group is going to be having, you'll be having an opportunity to do that study with him shortly, and out here we'll get into that also with Bob. It's Open Mind on a Saturday night. What are some of the types of investigation, the types of research that have led you to feel that you're going in this direction?
Well, these are bits and pieces that we've picked up over the last, 15 years at least. And we sort of decided now's the time to investigate some of them seriously. And these are gifted subjects that we have picked up through this period of time. And on top of that, some that have grown out of our own innate research.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best example I can give you are these basic ones that I've talked about. I can go right straight down the line.
Go for it.
We picked the easy ones first that have surfaced. For example, a way to remember, which everybody would like to have. We all forget things. And we evolved a system some time back that seemed to have that kind of promise, so we just brought it out of the back shelf and began to work with it. The super strength one, we have done some 50 or 60 tests with it, and we're about 33-35% efficient on it in terms of people's ability to do it.
Would you like people to contact you if they have had this experience before, the super strength experience?
Yes, I would indeed.
Do you have an address?
Yeah, just I have them write me or the Institute at Faber, Virginia, F-A-B-E-R, Virginia, 22938. And that's all they really need.
They know where you are out there.
Yeah, they know where we are.
All right.
They just write me, Robert Monroe, or Monroe Institute, Faber, Virginia, 22938. As a matter of fact, we get mail addressed to the Blue Ridge Mountains when it gets here. So these types of things, the super strength, the super memory, and the ability to sustain oneself on a minimum of food. And we played with that quite a bit and found some very interesting flip sides to that, and has great appeal, but we haven't gone that deeply. We've had about 18 or 20 subjects who have been able to successfully control that metabolism within their own self.
You know, the most successful experiment I've seen in that particular area was conducted by Dr. Patrick Flanagan and his wife, Gail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that they went for more than 6 months, taking only a very special kind of water that Patrick makes and some fruit juices along the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they found it very, very difficult then to get back onto a more normal diet.
Well, I can believe that. And there are some other fringes to that, of course, that immediately have portending factors. One of them, for example, the other side of it is that you can eat all you want and you won't gain any weight. And that sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Well, I have that problem.
We all have that problem.
Now, I weigh exactly what I weighed when I was 21 years old.
Well,
it makes everybody around me mad because I can't eat like a horse if I want to.
Oh, that's very good. Now, you see, your system has some kind of particular knowledge that these people that eat and get fat don't have. What's the difference? They will claim that it's part of your DNA, it's heredity, and all these kinds of things. But that, in a way, is a little bit of a cop-out. We think that consciousness can do it.
And, you know, it's funny in the matter of eating. There have been some weeks, I don't necessarily do it on purpose, I just get busy, that I won't eat but maybe two or three times a week.
Well, goodness sake, Bill, that's very good.
And I still don't lose weight.
All right, then your system has a part of that encoding already built into it, don't you see?
It makes my wife very unhappy.
I can see that it would. And, well, you see, there's a great mass of social eating that takes place. And you don't have that problem, but I do. Social eating is where you gain weight. You feel obliged to go out to dinner here and there, and for you to take a minuscule salad or something when you see all this luscious dinner is very difficult.
A minuscule salad translates into another inch around the waist for some
That's
people.
Right. So anyway, it's these types of things. You see, the other one that is most interesting is the ability to control the temperature of one's environment. Now, this is kind of, we're on an uncertain ground because we don't have enough hard measurement to say other than the body itself. But we're of the opinion that an individual who is controlling the ambience of the body is controlling a very narrow layer of air around the body, so that conceivably an individual can go out in zero weather with no clothes and suffer no loss of body heat, and body temperature stays the same. The same on high temperatures. We've had people out in a cabinet where they had roughly 110 degrees temperature, and they felt perfectly normal. Now, as I say again, we don't know how they're doing this, and that's part of the problem, because we think with this consciousness, how do they do it? It's not important. If they can do it, that's all it means.
Well, that sounds very familiar to one of the fads out here in Southern California, which I have done, and that is to trip the light fantastic over a bed of coals where the temperature there is 1,800 to 2,000 degrees.
Yes, and that's a good illustration of it. That permeated back east, I might add, and some of our people tried that, and some people even in a part of what we're talking about. And they were successful at it. Did you try it?
I certainly did, twice. It was like walking on popcorn.
Uh-huh.
Didn't to get a blister.
All right, now what are you doing?
Well, we have studied about that a lot. People like Tom Bearden, John Bedini, some
yes.
of these others have put their mind to it. They're quite convinced that this mechanism of what you're talking about is to be found within the left and right hemisphere of the brain.
Absolutely. This is our consciousness.
Which works as an interferometer
mm-hmm.
and brings everything right down to zero, and you are then literally setting up a field of energy around you. And it's that same field of energy that has the capability of changing the molecular structure of that dirt that you were talking about into something that is nutritious.
Well, this is precisely, by also inference, that particular energy field does not have to be, in essence, measured, calibrated, or whatever it may be. By our scientific community, all it has to do is work.
That's the main thing.
And once it works, then you're walking on coals. What's the difference? And you're doing exactly that. Is it an energy field? Science could speculate for years on that.
Well, we had some scientists out here who said it was perspiration on the bottom of the feet or water on the bottom of the feet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they were led across the coals for a 40-foot bed of coals and then back again, so that made it 80 feet, and then back again. So we had got up to 120 feet, and so they threw away that particular theory.
Yes.
And it was back to the drawing board.
Well, this is what I mean. Our position is that human consciousness doesn't care about if you get through that stage. It knows how this is done, but it doesn't know it within the language or the context of our culture. And so it says, let's do it.
So we have some terms that are coming up here that are appearing in the physics laboratory as well as the laboratory that you have there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're calling it consciousness. The physicists are calling it now an interferometer.
Yes.
you're calling it, you can train your consciousness to do things. The physicist was saying that you can teach your interferometer to set up certain energy fields that do certain things. That project energy at a distance, that project it very close, that can actually change the molecular structure and dynamics of anything that is of matter.
Yes. So you see, this is, you're saying, and I'm very much aware of it, that Beard and Ed Al are much along the same track. I think what we're saying is, let's go to the heart of it. Let's go to the basic of it. Don't try to analyze the field. Let's just use the field. Learn how to use it. And we have these small specks, or small mites, as it were, and you know many of them, obviously, that are using this. Just as you use electricity, but you don't know what it is. You just use it. So this is what's excited us, just some of the little preliminaries that we've been working on to be able to learn this, to learn to do one thing, and once having learned that one thing, move to another.
How do you go about that process of learning? What kind of work are your explorers doing, or are those that are involved with you that lead you to think this?
Bill, it's very simple. You're aware of our hemisync process.
Yes, indeed.
And this basically allows us to access very deep levels of consciousness down into the limbic system, wherever you want to call it. And to then, by such accessing, implant this or remove the belief system that says you can't do it.
Right.
I think that's the basic way. And so what, by reaching those levels of consciousness that are not normally available to this waking human that you and I are at this moment, let this begin to take place. We are changing it all the way down into that primeval level. So I would say this is the key thing that we do, and we set up a series of experiments where we take an individual and work him down into those levels, and then begin to, I guess the word, relieve, release, reorganize, the three R's. And give us another 6 or 8 months, and we should have the primary building blocks of this particular process.
Well, you know, one of the things that comes through my mind in talking to you about what you're doing, it sounds very similar about what we were subjected to in doing the firewalking, which was neuro-linguistic programming, where we were literally having to unlearn, as it were.
Yes, that's exactly true.
What Mother taught us, and then relearn by our own experience that we can do this.
Well, some of our people who had worked in some of the related processes did go into the firewalking thing when it came through in the East, and very successful at it, and learned much from it, too.
So all of these things about the power of the human consciousness, or the spirit, or whatever little name that you may want to put on that,
that's true.
Seem to be floating more and more to the surface in an effort to improve the quality of human life.
And you're in a much more public aspect than we are, of course. And I'm quite sure that you have sensed this from many directions. And it's very, very interesting that it is surfacing all over the place.
Yes, it is. It's interesting how so many different types of disciplines and sciences and studies, be they just medicine or physics, are all beginning to meld into this one effort, and that's dealing with the human mind, particularly the ability to heal oneself. Now, we just had a huge conference here in November about the holistic ability of the human being, that we should be well and healthy and have great longevity. But we have been doing it to ourselves, and what you're saying now is that you're seeing a way to open up the doors of healing or of non-disease.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have, that's the other part, is that through our Gateway graduate system, and you know about the Gateway.
Yes.
We have unearthed quite a number of people who have developed proficiency in these very things. And one of them has been, or one area has been in that healing modality. Most interesting how they arrived at it, too. And their conscious opinion of how they have arrived at it is, and I'm talking healing mode. They just discovered the energy and used it. That's about the only way they, the consensus is that that's what they are doing. And they inadvertently discovered it.
There is, certainly an oversimplistic way to put it, but we are physically a reflection, in a way, of what we are consciously or spiritually.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if we have some spiritual problems that need to be healing or healed, they're going to be reflected in our physical well-being. So we see that there are a lot of people, men of medicine, who are looking more toward the inward part of the human being to find out what it is that is really making him sick, or allowing the virus or the bacteria to do the damage that it's doing when it shouldn't be doing it. A breakdown of our own systems usually has been triggered by a breakdown of these very systems you're talking about, which are of a higher level of us.
Yes, but I'm not at all convinced that our consciousness, as we use it and know it in our culture, as it were, has the ability to understand that type of energy. That's the important thing. Understanding it is one thing. Using it is something else.
As long as it uses it.
That's what I'm getting.
Do you know what makes that television set work you watch?
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah. Or do you care?
That's more important.
Just turn it on. And don't give me any of the stuff about the diodes and tubes and everything.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. So anyway, you ask what's exciting us these days. We have a label for that project.
What is it?
H plus.
What does the H stand for?
Humans.
Humans plus. So we want to elevate the quality of the human being.
I guess that you might say that.
And you're working at elevating the quality of his consciousness.
That's right.
Or his spirituality, if you want to use that term.
But we, I guess, are very pragmatic in the sense that we think it ought to be reduced to a practical level.
Okay.
I think because if you say there's any philosophic base to it, think of how simplified man's life would be if he were able to achieve certain basic things with his consciousness. Let's take a very simple survival mechanism, food, warmth. Take those two, and he has obtained a tremendous freedom. Would you not say?
I certainly would. They, of course, would be very unhappy with you at the Alpha Beta grocery store.
Well, I suspect so. It's just the same thing as that. This would infer that you can go still wear clothes and you can use them for decorative purposes, but you would not really need them for anything else.
But we have been working for so long, if we want to improve man, to improve his body. So we will pump iron and take vitamins, and we'll do all of that. What you're saying is we've probably been letting the tail wag the dog.
That is, I think, I would not even categorically say so. I think you have very well put.
If we get the consciousness going in the right direction, then the old physical body is going to have to fall in line, like it or not.
And the other part is that I have a feeling this is going to be very easy to quote prove culturally. There's nothing so exciting as to see something that is actual proof of it. And in other words, never mind laboratory measurements, never mind, but someone who really does this. You, for example, if you only eat two or three times a week, that's an amazing thing. The average person will look at you in astonishment.
And I can turn right around and eat three humongous meals a day, which is what I always do when I go to Turtle Island in Fiji. I just really pig out. Nothing. 1 pound in 10 days. That's all I'll gain.
Well, now, didn't you ever stop to think that what part of you is doing this?
I figured something wasn't working.
Something's doing the controlling.
That's right. I didn't want it to be any more than it is.
In other words, who's doing the driving?
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Bob Monroe, and you see, we've gotten into some things here that I hope that they have provoked your imagination. They have provoked ours. A man whose group there in Virginia are working very, very closely with it and have, in their own way, paralleled their research, perhaps coming from a different point of view, but nevertheless doing that with the research of the Tom Durdens and the John Bedinis and some of the others of this world, and all of that's going to come together. I can see that happening rather quickly, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an opportunity for you to talk to Bob, who has written two of the finest books around on the out-of-body experience, and they should be must-books in your library. Far Journeys, his last one, and Journeys Out of Body, the first one. And you'll have a chance to talk to him. Let me give you the numbers so that you can talk to Bob Monroe with a beautiful selection of crystals, crystal jewelry, other stones, and books to enlighten the body, the mind, the soul, from astral projection and certainly a selection of metaphysical video rentals and sales. For holiday parties or gifts, then, on January 4th, start your new year right with author Stuart Wilde lecturing on Guardians of Life in the New Age. Who are your guides? Find out January 4th at Alexandria 2. For reservations and gift information, call Alexandria 2 Bookstore in Pasadena at 818-792-7885. That's 818-792-7885.
Roe Institute of Applied Sciences, and we have Richard on the line. Richard, welcome aboard.
Season's greetings to you, sir.
To you, too.
And Mr. Moreau, I had a couple of questions I would like to ask.
Go for it.
Mr. Moreau, what is the difference between astral projection and soul traveling? And through astral projection, can you move into other spiritual planes, such as moving from the physical to the astral, mental, causal, or etheric, or soul plane? And is it necessary to have a master to help you to get through these planes for your understanding?
Well, that is a number of questions. First of all, we have not used the term astral or astral projection because there's a lot of connotations to that that don't seem to apply. We use and have been a part of the coining of the term the out-of-body experience simply because that seems to be more acceptable in current-day concepts, as it were. As to its relationship, the out-of-body state, as to what is, we've heard, of course, of soul travel, as it were. We don't know too much about the whole soul travel process as it passes, so I can't give you an accurate statement one way or another on it. The third point has to do with the movement into what we call non-physical reality systems, and as one does change one's quote belief system, here we go again, that becomes relatively easy to do. We have not found that it requires a master or a guide to take you around and show you the ropes, as it were. You very instinctively or in memory begin to know these instead of having them demonstrated to you. But you have to change your belief system, your overview, your perspective before you can do such type of exploration.
There is a gateway program that's going to be underway here pretty soon in the Los Angeles area, isn't it?
Yes, we have. That gateway process is probably the most successful way to begin to find out about that. And it is a chance for individuals to do overviews, Bill. My understanding from our group is that in the first two or three months of 87, we're going to have several of our Gateway Extension Network programs out in California. How about that? And they'll be held all over the place. And you can call us or write us, and you can get some information about it.
Do you have a local number, a Los Angeles number?
I don't have one here. But I can give you one here in Virginia that you can call.
Okay. We'll take that one.
And that's 804-361-1127. And that has to do with the California programs. We've decided, because we are so, in the middle of 86, that we are so booked here that we would indeed expend a little energy moving it out into other areas where more people can go through the gateway experience. And that's why we are holding these in California.
You know, one of the things, Richard, that I enjoy so much about the work that Bob and his explorers and their group do at the Institute is that in all things, man has a tendency to put a little bit of mysticism to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly see that done quite often with something that is as interesting as the ability to go out of body. Mysticism, of course, prevails there as well. And even just in the terminology and what they are dealing with there, because you are dealing with the consciousness other than your own physical being, that's taken away, stripped away, and put down in very scientific terminology that you need to come to deal with to keep your foot, I guess, in reality, in one sense of the word.
Mm-hmm. Bill, I wanted to express to you that I also have experienced a fire walking, and I thought that was a very uplifting feeling, you know. And after I firewalk, I went out dancing that same night and got up and played basketball the next day and didn't have any problems whatsoever. But as far as the actual firewalking, it was very exhilarating, very uplifting.
And you had to change your belief systems to do it, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't know I had it in me until I did it, you know. And I really surprised myself. It really makes a difference when you really put your mind at something, you know.
Well, that's a very beautiful
how the body follows it.
The fact that you did do that is just a very fine illustration of all the things you're talking about.
Have you been able to use that ability now, Richard, further?
Yeah, I'm concentrating on myself a lot more better and centering my thoughts and our belief systems, you know, getting them all in order. Like I says, when I actually done the firewalking, they had a cameraman there taking pictures, you know, and it was my surprise to see myself on photograph when I was walking across that I had a smile on my face, you know, not having no fear whatsoever, you know.
I think it's fun to be able to walk barefooted across a hot pavement now and not have to jump up and down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful way, a beautiful entry point on what this consciousness can do if it decides to do it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Richard, thank you for stepping in. Appreciate
you have a great
much.
Show.
Thank you.
Merry
because
Christmas
there's guys like you listening to it, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
We're 9 minutes away from 10 o'clock on this Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Robert Monroe. Get him to stay with us. Alan, you're on.
Yes, Bill. How are you tonight, Mr. Monroe?
Great.
Good, Bill. First of all, I want to say I'm impressed with you. You were talking about how one needs to, in so many words, separate from the world, and yet I hear you on KBC constantly giving current events about world affairs. I'm wondering how you make that that switch.
It isn't easy.
No, I wouldn't think so.
It is a... Well, I guess a part of the practicality of life. I don't mind making that switch. In fact, it keeps me rooted in the world that that most people are living in. If I lived just in the open mind world all of the time, I really would be woo-woo, but I would certainly be enjoying it a great deal more.
Well, wouldn't you say that's ultimately our goal, is to somehow be immune to all the garbage that's going on?
Oh, I think not being immune, being immune is one thing, but ignoring it is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Changing it is, because sticking your head in the sand, you just make an awfully big target.
Well, that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about. I noticed a shift of consciousness when I am in a good so-called spiritual mood, and then I hear what's going on through the newspapers or on the TV or radio, and it triggers a shift of consciousness, and I have to fight like crazy to come back to where I was prior to hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice it, too, with people in my past that have somehow wanted to belittle me or put me down. I get this kind of strong heartbeat, and I feel a kind of shift of consciousness to a very negative state of mind, and I'm wondering if Bob wants to comment on that kind of shift of consciousness.
Well, that's rather difficult to comment on, other than the fact that one of the biggest problems is to move in a direction where you can indeed handle this local reality system, if you want to put it that way.
Right.
And I think one of the things that once you develop a particular kind of overview on it, you find it much more interesting, because you know that this is indeed a local traffic, a local custom.
You want to hang on there, Alan?
Sure, Bill.
We're going to have to take a break for news here at 10 o'clock. We'll be back And Bob, please stay with us for as long as you can. It's open mind, whatever you want to. But it is a powerful thing that we are just now beginning to come to grips with. We've dealt with it as romanticist and as religionist and as primitives for a long, long time. But it is probably the single most powerful thing that we can come to grips with right now, wouldn't you say, Bob? Let me punch you in. There you are. Excuse me?
Can you hear me?
There we go.
It looks to me that that is one solution, and if we can get enough enough active consciousnesses at work in producing this new approach, and not just us, and it's already begun, of course, that something dynamic may take place.
Well, we're beginning to understand the physics and dynamics of what goes on, and that helps our little minds. We were talking to Alan here a minute ago.
Yes, I'm still here.
Alan, one of the things I wanted to say, you were talking about the shifting in my week here, where I deal with the very mundane news of the day. I look at that upon as something that is a constant reminder to me about what we're talking about here tonight. The purpose that we have in life is to end the necessity of these kind of stories happening. This onslaught of inhumanity against everything.
So how can you be in the world but not of it and still be reminded of it constantly?
Well, all of it is a learning experience, and these are things that you always, an evolving experience. And as we can see now, even in the viewpoint that I get an opportunity to take, there is so much for us to do in terms of evolvement.
Well, you don't
have to be a part of that jungle out there necessarily. But you certainly see that the work is cut out for you as an individual.
Yeah.
Because there it is, laid out in front of you every day. And in the midst of all of that, there are some wonderful stories, too, about the advancement of man.
I guess what bothers me a lot is this Rambo mentality. I don't know how it is, Bob, in Virginia, but out here, 9 out of 10, the movies you go to is a shoot 'em up, kill 'em, and it's disgusting to me that theaters and TVs can't be used for more metaphysical probing rather than a constant reminder of our animal nature.
Well, look at the wonderful toys that are under the Christmas tree.
Oh, it's
Christmas.
Disgusting.
Laser guns, and you know, your fellow playmate has a target, you know.
Yeah.
Hit me in the chest with the target and you ring the bell.
You know, I'm a bachelor, and I often think about potential man-woman relationship. But I look at my nieces and nephews and relatives and friends who have kids, and I think a second time, and I don't envy them at all bringing up kids in this mentality.
Well, parents have been saying that since they were parents.
Yeah. So, how do you, now you report the news, when you go out in the world along the street, you see something that reminds you of the primitive nature of society, how do you center?
How do I center?
Yeah, I mean, how do you bounce off that?
Well, I come from the very pit of it. That's the San Diego Freeway. and everything from there is uphill. And so it makes it a little easier for me there. Now, it is a reminder of work that I have to do so that I am not doing that. Of the example that I can set so that I am not causing people to react as I might be reacting to others.
You ever get those characters that almost seem to lay in wait for you? No matter how much you grow, they can still get your goat?
Oh, yeah, people do not like for you to grow.
Oh, no.
Because you are now putting responsibility on them to grow.
Yeah.
It works the other way around. Most people want to pull you down. You mustn't let that happen.
Right. Well, that's somebody saying that you have to be careful of responding with hate because you become like those you hate. And that makes a lot of sense to me because I found that the more I struggle for metaphysical awareness, that struggling actually gets me deeper into the darkness. I don't know. I probably didn't say that clear enough.
No, you just talk about frustrations that are coming.
Frustrations, yeah.
Bob, I know you've tried to get in there a couple of times, and Alan and I are hogging the conversation, and you're the honored guest.
Oh, well, I don't know about the honored, but it is difficult to get in, I'll tell you. I would just wanted to drop a little interesting thing for Alan, because this is one of our, you know, some of our think tank sessions we get into this, and that's what would be a utopian culture. And it would appear to me, because he's talking about the movies and television, things like that, would be a culture that starts at infancy with that beginnings of human consciousness. And its sole purpose, everything, is to enhance that consciousness arbitrarily, not with any particular belief system, but just to enhance it. So that all the things that you perceive of as negative things are not negative. They are done for only one purpose, and that's to enhance that consciousness. What that consciousness becomes is something else again. So that conceivably you would have all the things that you see that affect human behavior are all aimed at that goal instead, and rather than just to simply entertain or provide spectacular pictures and shoot 'em ups or whatever, are intended and very carefully aimed at making that consciousness more effective for itself. Quite a trick.
How about the area of Jesus spoke of regenerating? Now, somehow, I would think that if you talk about soul travel and that sort of thing, you're enhancing the aging process. I can't picture Jesus, when he would speak about regeneration, as him thinking in terms of astral travel. This, to me, would wear out the physical organism.
I think there's a very quick and very solid response that I can give for that. And that is that we very firmly take the position now that everyone goes through the out-of-body experience during sleep. The fact that you don't remember it does not mean that it does not take place. And that that is a very natural process of the human mechanism. And that is to be released from that physical body activity for a period. And we are not sure how deep that goes. It may be happening in a waveform that is right now, so that you are here now physically awake and also active in another reality system simultaneously. You just don't remember it.
You know, you may enjoy reading Dr. Sophia Caragula's book called Through the Curtain, in which she talks about the fact that, indeed, this does happen to you nightly, and this curtain that you go through lets you go to school and gives you a lot of these things that you may call insight. You're actually learning them in the out-of-body state.
But do you find that it helps you get more youthful, return to some sort of fountain of youth, or is this hastening the aging process? What is the connection between astral travel and our longevity in age?
I don't know that there's necessarily a connection. I would say certainly that out-of-body activity, I mean consciously, certainly does not hasten the aging process. I was just, when you talked aging, I was saying, how long have I been doing this? I mean consciously. And I go back to 1958, and how many years is that?
May I ask how old you are, Bob?
Huh?
May I ask how old you are?
I'm 71 years old.
Oh, well, I think you're proving your point. Well, thanks very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Alan, good to have you aboard.
My pleasure, always.
It's a Saturday night in Los Angeles, 16 minutes past 10 o'clock. I'm Bill J. I have Steve on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for the show, Bob. You know, I mean, Bill, in your own way, you've made me a better person with all these topics you have every week.
Well, thank you. That makes it all worthwhile.
It's a wonderful breath experience. I was wondering also, Bill, real quick, has there ever been any consideration given to transmitting your show across the country like Michael Jackson does?
Yes, there has. When the American Broadcasting Company finally opens up the satellites on weekend nights, they certainly have indicated they want to sit down and talk to me about doing that. At the present time, the network is dark at night on the weekends.
Uh-huh.
The reason for that is economics at the present time.
Capital cities, too.
And, it's very difficult for them to sell that the amount of time necessary in order to make that profitable. ABC is not
by it.
ABC is not a philanthropic organization, or it's not intended to be
right.
Anyway.
Right. The rest of the country, you sure profit by it, though.
Well, how nice of you. Thank you very much.
Also, Mr. Monroe, I just read your first book recently, and it really opened my mind. It was really wonderful. And do you have any indication of when your second book might be out in paperback?
The second book?
Yes, sir.
Far Journeys, I doubt that will be in paperback for some years to come.
Okay, we'll have to go out by it tomorrow then and hardback. Mr. Monroe, I've had some, I dream quite a bit. I dream a couple of times a night.
Yes.
And they're always wonderful dreams, and a lot of them are flying dreams of various kinds. They're always wonderful. Recently, I've had quite a few remarkable dreams that seem to be intensifying. One in particular was my first verifiable precognitive dream. I was wondering if you could just go into a little bit more what you touched upon earlier about dreaming and sleeping and going into maybe astral body projection at that point.
Well, I think I should respond that we haven't gotten firmly into the position that that all dreams, at least the ones that you remember, are forms of what we call NVC, which is nonverbal communications. Now, you can speculate all that you desire as to the source of that communication, and if you take your own pick, whether it's your inner self, whether it's your soul, your superconsciousness, or even another part of you that is non-physical.
And maybe all of the above.
It could well be all of the above, but it's the most interesting is to take it as a form of communication and nonverbal. And the point is that oftentimes it is translating something out from one medium into another, and I say one process into another, and therefore it is often distorted or filtered by your own memory system or your own ability to remember it. And therefore, it is not the same thing as you exactly, particularly, remember it as a dream. Once you begin to take that perspective, however, a lot of things fall into place, that it is a form of communication. And, of course, all the dream analysts for years have been doing this, but take it as a direct form of call it guidance if you want. Some of them pretty hard. Nightmares are very heavy guidance, as it were.
Some of the dreams I have, I don't know where they'd be guiding you.
Well, that's the problem.
Right down the rosy path to who knows what.
That's right.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your writings, Mr. Monroe.
Play around with Far Journeys. It's got another approach to it.
Well, I'll definitely go over to the Bodhi Tree tomorrow and get that, and I hope you feel better.
Oh, I'll be better.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Good to have you aboard. And Rick.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, Bill, and good morning, Bob.
Good morning is true.
I would like to first relate my experience with astral travel or out-of-body experience, and that was when I was 7 years old. I was going to sleep, and I found myself suddenly out of body. And
you did,
Excuse me?
You did, huh?
Yes, I did.
Everybody goes but Bill.
What I did was, since I was so young, I didn't have any fear or real apprehension about the experience. So I flew around my balcony and down the stairs towards the wall, and I saw a British target on the wall. It was like an insignia from a British warplane. Could you hold on just a second? I'll be right back.
Where's he going?
I don't know. Rick, hurry right back.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. Happens to everybody.
I was taping this, but somehow the tape just stopped, so I guess I'll go without it.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay, I was going down through the down the stairs, and I saw the British target on the wall. And when I did that, I said, well, I might as well see what I can do and go through the wall. And as I did that, I accelerated, and I felt like I was moving very fast and very slow at the same time. And then the target disappeared, and it was a hole. I went through it, and I found myself at the controls of a World War II plane probably a Spitfire, and I was shooting at Nazi warplanes. And suddenly I saw flak coming at the canopy, and everything went black, and I popped out on the other side of the wall, floating above the floor. At that point, I tried to get my mother's attention in the kitchen and told her I was flying and tell her what happened. And she was physically downstairs in the kitchen with some guests. And I had projected this thought at her, and she clearly turned towards me and said, "Go back to sleep, Ricky, you're dreaming." So I did. I went back upstairs. I flew back upstairs and got back in my body. And a few minutes later, I came downstairs. And she had just ushered the guests out, and I told her what happened. And she told me again that I was dreaming. So that closed the book on it for a while. Then in college, about 5 years ago, somebody mentioned Journeys Out of the Body. And I read the book and found out what had happened. And all between that time, I had many dreams that Steve mentioned, that lots of flying dreams. Now, Steve's question and your answer helped quite a bit with my question. But I do have another one. And that is, I've been using the methods that you prescribed in Journeys Out of the Body. And in my conscious state, I've only been able to get small parts of my body out, like my hand or a foot or something like that. And I haven't been able to really roll out or anything. But in my sleep, I am very conscious of going out of body, and I have a lot of fun with it. What can I do to allow myself to have this experience in a conscious waking state?
Well,
or is there really a difference?
First of all, interesting comment about, are you, my own curiosity prompts this question. Are you old enough to have, or young enough, I'll put it this way, to have been in an airplane over somewhere in World War II in a Spitfire? In other words, could you have been flying an airplane in World War II?
In this physical life?
Yeah.
No, I'm 29.
So then it gets conceivable that you indeed might have been flying a World War II airplane.
Yeah.
Not in this particular life.
Not in this life, no.
Interesting concept.
Yeah. I had the physical sensation of being older, taller, and had thoughts that seven-year-olds really shouldn't be having.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very clear to me to this day.
I think that that's a very interesting study, and I would recommend that you explore that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Explore it. It's very simple. When you go to bed at night, simply lie back, and once you get relaxed, well, remember the episode and then try to remember details about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah.
What you get out of it, because you should, if that premise is true, and it's only a premise, you should be able to find out details about it, including who you were at that time.
Well, I have done some work with it. My wife is a past life regressionist.
Mm-hmm.
Since we met a few years ago, she's been studying, and I've also been channeling for about 7 months now. I've been in class for 8 months, and I've gotten in touch with some of the ideas about that life through the channeling, mostly a little bit through the past life regression, which I didn't take to quite easily right away.
Did she get you back into a World War II situation?
That wasn't the thing that happened. Mostly it came out of the channeling.
Hmm.
Channeling first my higher self through writing, and then vocally channeling other beings, and also speaking to other channels. My wife also is a channel, and I associate with a lot of channels in the Los Angeles area.
There are a lot of them.
Yeah. What came out from my own channeling was that, channeling my higher self, that is, was that I indeed found out my name, what I looked like, what kind of person I was, and why I chose to die so young in that life.
Have you taken time to investigate to see if indeed that person did exist?
No, I haven't done that yet. I guess
that's the thrilling thing.
That's well worth investigating.
Yeah, and it's even conceivable that my parents from that life could be alive.
There are records that you can get that would tell you all about it.
Yeah.
And whenever you find out that that person did exist, Rick,
you
think we had an exhilarating time walking on the cold? And then whenever you meet the parents, if they're still alive?
That should be real good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Solidifying your conscious out of body, there are two approaches. Your belief system's in pretty good shape, so...
Right. My process is quite a bit out through the channeling.
Why don't you write us, we have some tape systems that you can use at home.
Well, now, I've just received the Gateway Discovery Focus 10 series.
Yeah.
Well, you're in good shape there.
And I haven't had time yet to go over them.
Well, there's only one answer there. It won't do you any good in the package.
That's true, but I've only just received them, so I'll get right to them.
And we're going to have the Gateway meetings going on here next month.
Yes, I'm very excited about that.
If you call in about that, that would be very helpful, too.
Yeah.
But information in Journeys Out of the Body.
Sure, they have the book over there.
Oh, they do.
Okay. All right, Rick, thank you very much for being aboard.
Thank you. Great talking to you, and great talking to you, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you.
31 minutes past 10 on this Saturday of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, and with Robert is Cheryl.
Hello.
Are you ready to get in on the studies here, Cheryl?
You know it.
Okay.
How wonderful it is to talk with you. It's great.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm very interested in the OB state, and I often do go OB during sleep and also from a conscious level as I'm laying down, of course. But when I am in the OB state, I find that I have to be very, very careful with my thoughts because I'm often confronted with hidden desires that I unknowingly take with me into that state.
Whoops.
Yeah. So it seems to me that the ability to keep focused is a necessary step, you know.
What kind of desires, Cheryl, are you taking over to the other side with you? What is this?
Well, you know, just daily type of desires and hidden even from me, you know. And right now, in fact, I'm trying to get in contact with self and to discover them and to release some of these things that I keep with me when I go into that state.
Hmm.
But
should she do that, Bob?
Can't you what? Well, I couldn't hear the little part of it there.
She has all of these hidden desires that seem to want to go with her whenever she goes out of body.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's quite natural, and you begin to use the old Gene Autry technique on it.
The Gene Autry technique?
Yes.
Hire a very expensive free agent?
No. Gene Autry, back in the old movie days, you know, had to satisfy... feed food to little boys and girls, and so the boys never wanted to kiss the girl, and the girls always wanted it to be romantic in these old westerns. So just when after all the battle and so on, and here's the hero, Gene Autry, is about ready to kiss the girl, and all little boys in the movie house are saying, oh no, he's not going to kiss her. And he says, honey, I love you. But first, I want to sing you a song. He picks up the guitar and they play, and he goes off and he never kisses a girl.
He always kissed Champion instead.
And the modern version of that is what they call delayed gratification, which means all these hidden desires, all you have to say to them is very simple. We'll get to you later, but first, you go take a nice, calm, objective run in the out-of-body state.
Sounds good.
Well, you can't deny them. The point is, if you deny them, then they say, oh, no, you can't deny me.
Yeah.
So you turn around and say, I'll get to you later.
Don't make them an issue, in other words.
That's right.
Okay, well...
Well, there's a time and place for all things, Cheryl.
Well, yeah, it seems to be all the time, though. can you give
What's
me...
What's your address?
Oh, come on. Can you give me... Mr. Monroe, can you give me a practical exercise for daily use to promote concentration?
To promote who?
Concentration.
Well,
focus, you know?
Yes. I'm so much into what we do that to lift it out of that context and say, here's a thing for concentration.
Right.
We just have a little simple tape that helps you do that.
I see.
And it utilizes this hemisync process, and it's used either for mental and or physical concentration.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how to say it except that I perhaps you would write us, I'll send you a simple demo tape with my compliments, and then you can play around with it.
Okay. Is that procedure included in the discovery tape?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have or have access to the discovery tapes?
Yes, actually, I've been using them.
Okay, well, you're on your way.
All you have to do is to go into the, I think it's the Free Flow 10.
Uh-huh.
And that Free Flow 10, just work with that. And you can actually work with it, eyes open, whatever.
Yes, you know, but when I use it, when I'm really able to be present, I'm fine. But when I'm not, I have a lot of things in my mind, it seems like I go off into something else and all these thoughts, and I see vivid pictures and all these unusual occurrences. So I have to, there's a difference between when I'm very, very focused and right there, and or the other side of that is being, you know, drifty and my mind going off into other things.
I can tell you how to help that. Start that free flow about 5 minutes into it.
Ah, I see.
That's all. And don't go through the processing. Just simply started about 5 minutes in.
Oh, I see.
And you're right down to the nitty-gritty that way.
That's right. And therefore, you won't get into a lot of that ideograph stuff. We have all sorts of words for it. Neurobaloney, whatever.
Yeah.
Neurobaloney.
You won't get into it if you just simply go past the opening stages, because then you're using another part of the hemisync that doesn't engender that.
Oh, I see.
Well, that's what I do.
Okay, Cheryl?
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for checking in.
Merry Christmas.
And don't worry about those little thoughts. Everybody has them, okay?
Okay, great.
All right. And we have Greg on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you? Greg. Pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure to have you aboard.
It's a wonderful show. I hope you realize the great service you're doing to people in Southern California.
Well, thank you.
I have two quick questions, one for you, Bill, and one for your guest. Is my imagination just going completely out of whack here, or is someone jamming your signal?
No, your imagination is not going out of whack in one sense of the word. The signal is not being jammed as such. However, there is a radio station in another country.
Oh, I
see. To the south. That is not very careful about the power output that they use, because they're not under the control of the Federal Communications Commission.
All right, so it's not a complete act of paranoia.
No, it's not.
To assume that someone's trying to jam your signal on purpose.
We'll try to overcome that here, hopefully by putting an optophonics processor here, which will totally modulate the carrier.
It is interesting, though, that the jamming doesn't start until your show comes on.
Well, it's because it's like midnight wherever this happens, you see.
Oh, I see. I see. All right, fine. Now I have a question for Mr. Monroe. Concerning the out-of-body experience, is it, I suppose what I probably should do, listening to your previous guests on the phone, I probably should read your books, but I wasn't even aware you had books out. But anyway, I'm trying to figure out the sequence of going out-of-body in the sense that... Now, just recently, I've been meditating a great deal. And in the process of meditation, sometimes, not all the times, I find myself being beckoned to go off and do some task. Now, I'm aware physically where I am, in the sense that I'm in my house, laying down, meditating on another, but some part of me is going off and doing something. Is that a true out-of-body, or is that something else?
Not in the terms that we utilize it, but it is a dualism that does sometimes occur. Now, if you can simply transfer your consciousness to that totally to that other part, then you would be in the out-of-body state.
So it's a sort of an act of will, then, you say?
It's a decision. Think of it this way. We use an analog of a rubber band, and that other part of you stretches the rubber band, and you're holding on to this end. So all you have to do is release this end, and you will snap there.
Is there any danger inherent in doing that?
No, not as I hear what you are. There's a great misconception about the, quote, unnaturalness of the out-of-body state and the inherent dangers of it. The only fears you have are the ones that you generate, and you can always return very easily on a willful base. All you do is think of your physical body and wiggle some part of it, and you'll be back.
And there's no danger to the physical body, more or less, being uninhabited while you're gone?
No, not generally. This is generally, I should say, not specifically. The only danger is your own fear, but danger, that's one of the parts of the myths of our history or whatever.
I see. So you would just let go of the...
You just let go of the other end of the rubber band, the one you're holding on to, and you'll be there.
It's just as simple as saying, okay, I want to focus my energy here.
As I hear what you're saying, it is that simple for you.
Yeah, okay. And how do you, is there any way to tell why I would sort of be beckoned or called? Someone has a task for me.
Well, I think that's a very positive aspect. That means that you have a similar, in symbols anyway, you have a friend. And there are things that perhaps that friend realizes you need to do or see or perceive. And so therefore, there's, hey, Joe, let's go.
Whenever you talk about the friend there, Bob, are you talking about an entity from the other side? I know we've discussed this before.
I would not even make the decision on any individual as to what that friend is. It could all be a symbology.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can indeed be some externals. And we found both of them. So it's a question of not knowing in an individual case which it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that I could determine who it was?
Oh, sure. Ask and you shall receive.
Just ask who it is, huh?
That's all you know.
But what if you don't ask, you won't find out.
Yeah, well, I haven't. For some curious reason, I haven't felt the need to ask.
Well?
Could be you're afraid to get an answer.
Yeah,
but,
I think that's probably it.
The main point of it is have fun with it. That's all. Once you have fun with it, you lose any fears and you lose any problems in connection with it.
Real learning is always fun.
That was a curious experience, sort of being dragged off to another part of the world and asked to perform some task, you know.
Well, it doesn't sound like you were dragged kicking.
No, not at all, not at all.
So that's what I mean. Go have fun.
Yeah, and there's no danger to my body.
No.
Not under the way you're doing it, because you really don't have a fear.
Okay. So once I loosen my own fear, then that's all we need to worry about.
That's all you need to worry about.
All right. Well, thank you
very
much.
Have a good time.
Okay, thank you.
Greg, thank you for sharing that with us.
Most pleasure.
Edie.
Hey.
Is that Eddie?
It's Eddie.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Bill Jenkins. Greetings. Happy winter solstice to everybody.
It is that time of year, isn't it?
Certainly is. I'm wondering if people with ESP have more out-of-body experiences, and if deja vu and OB experiences are connected, and have you gentlemen read the book The Star Rover by Jack London?
It was a very interesting book of Jack London's. It certainly was. Dick Supton was circulating that one about 18 months ago. That answered that question.
I wonder if Jack, I think it was based on an experience a prisoner had at San Quentin in the 1800s in
mm-hmm.
California. And he had out-of-body experiences, regression, and... Jack wrote a book about it, and it was quite interesting. If anybody can get a copy, they should read it.
I might add to that one. We have a young man who is in prison now, who has learned the out-of-body state, and the prison no longer contains him in the non-physical state. So he practices regularly the out-of-body state during his stay in prison. He's still there.
Well, I can imagine that'd be one of the best places in the world to learn that skill very fast.
Well, of course, it changed him.
Certainly would. How can we contact Mr. Murrow? I didn't get the phone number or the address. And
Well, let us give it to you again, pray tell.
Oh, my. especially if you were looking much for people who have... abilities that have come by them naturally. We'd like to hear from you. Name is Monroe Institute, Faber, Virginia, FABER, Virginia, 22938.
Mm-hmm.
22938.
Mm-hmm. And Is there, how about biofeedback? Would that help in...
That's one of the tools, one set of tools is where it can be very effective in at least measuring where you are. And we've used biofeedback off and on for the last 10 years anyway, in terms of measurement strictly. As a learning process for the out of body, we haven't been able to match those two up.
Well, that's very interesting, and I have these experiences just naturally, just for a flash of a few seconds. So it doesn't seem to sustain longer than, say, a minute at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not during the sleeping state, though. It's usually somewhere off when I'm supposedly doing something else during the daytime.
Well, some of the, I think one of them, I don't know about the San Diego freeway, but one of our people, while driving a car, pops out and moves ahead of the car down the road looking for, what do you call them, glucose.
That's a anti-CHP, we would call it out here, mechanism.
Okay, and he go 5 and 10 miles ahead of his car while he's driving. I wouldn't do it, but he does.
You know, I had an engineer who was taking some, going to be an actor, and in learning to quiet himself, he was listening to tapes to get into the kind of right frame of mind to perform as a different character in the car, and he had himself a brand new Datsun 280Z, and he was on the San Diego freeway, and all at once he found himself about 50 feet above his car.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared him to death because he thought somebody was going to run into the car. And or he was going to miss getting off at Burbank Boulevard or wherever it was that he wanted. And the car started getting off like it was supposed to there. And he popped back into the car. But he got to where he started enjoying that experience. He could see down the road where there was a wreck. Cops were coming. And he figured he was the only one in town driving his car from 50 feet above it. So he was okay.
That's very good. Very good.
That's great.
All these things happening all over the place, Bill.
Well, to everybody.
Except you.
Right.
Maybe a Christmas present. Ask Santa for
a body.
All these
right things.
Yes. One of these days it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
You come east.
I'm gonna come get in one of your Faraday cages and do it.
All right.
All right, Eddie, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Okay, thank you.
We're 11 minutes away from 10 on this Saturday night. It's open mind. Robert Monroe. And we have Dennis on the line. Hi, Dennis.
Well, hello. What is the way in which a person can instigate with himself such as to do more dreaming or to remember the dreams? Isn't that what we're talking about?
Well, I think it's more than dreams.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, but isn't that part of it or not?
Well, the way you can remember dreams a lot more easily is to break in on one of your sleep cycles. You are sleeping at night in terms of roughly an hour and a half cycles of going into deep sleep and coming up and into what is called dreaming or REM sleep. And if you learn that the length of that cycle or where it is in your sleep cycle and just simply have someone gently wake you up, you'll remember your dreams very vividly.
I didn't know. Oh, let me suggest that you speak up. I think it's perhaps only me, but we can barely hear you on the telephone anyway. I don't know how it is on the radio, but your guest's voice is very faint. All right?
Well, we've got him all the way in Virginia. I mean, boondocks in Virginia.
Well, not quite the boondocks.
There we are. That sounded better.
Yeah, that was better right away. And before I hang up, did you ever think of getting General George Keegan on the air with you for an interview?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
We're going to try to do a show called Soviet Star Wars.
Good.
They have quite a program. Go ahead. We'll have Tom Bearden, General Keegan, some of the others on.
Good for you. Yeah, that would be important. This fellow Keegan is the best man going, I'd say. All right, enough from you. From me to you. I'm an old fool. I better hang up.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much. All right, Dennis, you're on.
Oh, that was Dennis.
Oh, that was Dennis.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time for this hour anyway.
Well, Bill, I think I'm gonna have to check out on you on this run.
All right.
And I enjoyed it very much, and I want to say how much I enjoy you.
Well, thank you.
As an old pro, I love to hear a good man work, and you certainly are a nice master at what you do.
Well, I get inspired because I have the Robert Monroes of this world on this show. And the work that you have done has certainly helped me understand what I am doing.
Well, as I say, if I were running a network again, I would certainly see where I could find you.
Oh, listen, go get a job quickly over at Cap Cities.
It's much nicer back here in the boondocks.
All right. Could we have that telephone number again before you take off so that if people are interested in the Gateway Series, that will be coming up here in January?
That number, very quickly, is 804-361-1127. 804-361-1127.
And then the address, if they want to write you, particularly if they have experienced the...
Faber, Virginia, 22938.
Just Faber, Virginia, 22938, I get it. But
mm-hmm.
particularly if you've experienced the unusual things like superhuman strength, any of these things that we think that the consciousness can be retrained to do again. Be sure to reach Bob. Thank you, Bob. Thank you for the work that you do at the Institute.
My pleasure, and keep doing it.
And we're looking forward to you getting out here in body here.
I will be out in the spring.
All right. Then we'll get you together again in studio then.
Good night.
Good night.
Take care.
Take care of that cold.
I will.
Or whatever it is. Taiwan flu. And we have another hour, just you and I. It'll be an open forum between 11 and midnight. So give me a call. We'll open it up to anything that's on your open mind. Come on in. Here is just yours and mine. We were so delighted that Bob Monroe was able to stay with us an extra hour. He, when we contacted him this evening, he thought an hour was going to be all. He has Taiwan flu. And we know what that is around KABC. We have just been flued down. Let me give you the numbers so we will just open it up to a general discussion of these things that we've talked about so much on Open Mind. Los Angeles number is 520-TALK. In the San Fernando Valley, 990-TALK, T-A-L-K. If you're in Orange County, I'd like to talk to you. 750 is your number. Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, 244-TALK. In the San Gabriel Valley, 448-TALK, T-A-L-K. In the South Bay, 679-TALK. And in the Compton, Lakewood, Downey area, that's also Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, down in there, you're certainly invited to talk to us, too. As we, just flit hither and thon over all of the areas that we're going to be dealing with. So the lines are beginning to fill up here. Which one do we go to first? None of them yet. But Mr. Monroe is not with us anymore. He had to go back to bed. The old flu bug guy. I thought I would take a moment to bring you up to date on what we have. There go the glasses. What we have in store, we'll take you all the way up to April. Next week, which will be during the Christmas holidays on the 27th of December, something rather special for you. We don't know exactly what it was going to be. There had been some question about just when the vacation was going to start, and I didn't know whether I was going to be here next week or not, but it'll be something for you. The following 2 weeks will be rebroadcast of previous shows. Then on January 17th, for the first time, noted lecturer and author Tom Valentine comes to Open Mind. Now, his exacting research and study deals with some of the amazing new scientific discoveries and breakthroughs that we have touched upon, as well as a researcher's look at some of the fascinating mysteries of the universe. Tom is very bright, and we're very delighted to have him on. On January 24th, Greta Woodrue will be with us. And the following week, by the way, Greta will be in town conducting a weekend seminar at one of the out at the airport. You can contact us, your broadcast information. We have some numbers for you if you want to get into Greta's amazing seminar, which will be in the latter part of January. I will be conducting a panel with Greta on that weekend of the 31st of January. On the 31st of January, Stephen Laverne Ross from the World Research Foundation will join us, one of the really fine organizations here. We'll be talking about the Rife microscope and Dr. Rife himself, which is a great story of hope and tragedy all at the same time. February 7th, Nick Nicerino will join us. Again, it'll be the crystal skull and those kind of things. On February 14th, Dr. Maxine Asher, who has not been with us for some time, along with Renee Hatfield and Brad Steiger and perhaps others, will be joining us. We'll be talking about ancient civilizations, Atlantis, and some of the new Atlantean research that Dr. Asher has been getting into. February 21st, the amazing Peter Hercos will be back to put you on the hot seat. What a marvelous, marvelous time we had with Peter here 4 or 5 weeks ago. February 28th, Soviet Star Wars, the evidence. March 7th, UFO update, the evidence. And the evidence will be primarily from government documents and files. And we'll have various UFO investigators here for that one. On March 14th, the out-of-body experience again will be touched with Jerry Gross and the group from Search and Prove. They will be here. Jerry will be in studio. You'll call, and he will flip out a body, go to where you are, check your environment, and come back and describe it to you. We think that'll be a little bit of evidence of the out-of-body experience as we get into an evidentiary state here in the coming year. March 21st, Bigfoot Sasquatch, the evidence. We have a lot of new evidence on that one for you. The Amazing World of Borderland Sciences with Tom Brown comes up March 28th. Tom's second visit to us. Here again, research, just hardcore research on a lot of the material that we discuss on Open Mind. Tom, very candid, doesn't necessarily buy everything he hears. We have to look at it at a microscope, and we're good to have that around. Voices from the Other Side on April 4th, the evidence. You'll hear a lot of those voices from the other side. And then the Dodger season gets upon us, and we'll try to get on with it there. Okay, Phil, you're on. Welcome aboard.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing fine.
Great. I was real interested in talking a little bit about some of my spiritual feelings about the mental health field. I have been personally, Bill, working in the area of helping paralyzed veterans get themselves a halfway house here in our Southland. And the efforts have been coordinated, by an organization that has been raising the funds for the PVA. They're a very exciting group to participate with, and I personally, Bill, had a chance to go down and see the land down there in the Ramona, San Diego area. I'm excited about it, and what's really interesting spiritually has happened to me is that while I was working there for about a year and a half, I found a need to actually leave the job and to seek some assistance, but I had some confusion. What happened was I was looking for a psychiatrist who actually participated in the metaphysical experience. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was interesting because I didn't find what I was looking for, but through a number of different experiences through that week, I finally ended up learning a little bit more about some of the penal codes and what happens in the mental health system. And what I'm calling tonight about is the idea that came to me last week when I was talking to David Hirsch, you may be familiar with on the KMET program. And I was mentioning to him the idea of the strength of metaphysics in the area of mental health. And what I wanted to create are suppositions as the development right now in that area is so lacking in terms of understanding in the way that I feel. I personally have had a bitter experience in the hospital, and I'm just kind of bringing it out right now. I wanted to kind of discuss that with you and look at some of the alternatives that we might be able to sit down and discuss as, relevant human beings, and in a sense, using that consciousness that we're all trying to find inside of ourselves, ways that we can communicate so that those alternatives can be provided in our hospitals. Do you follow me?
In a way.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I do.
It's just a feeling that I came in telling these people that I had some kind of past life experience that I needed to take care of. And I felt that a part of myself really wanted to get back to what was really happening in myself at that particular life. And what I learned was, what I got inside of the hospital was an incredible lesson. And to make a long story short, what happened was, I found out that I couldn't get the assistance that I needed in the first part of my experience with the 5150, because what happens is there's a 72-hour hold. And basically, like, all the power is kind of taken away from you as an individual. Do you follow me?
As you, whenever you're first taken into one of those
instances? Yeah, uh-huh. It's sort of a lock and key situation, and you sort of...
Watch you closely for 72 hours to see that you're not going to hurt yourself or anybody else, or whether this was a right move.
Right, and my feeling was is that I'm trying to, you know, look into myself to see if the analysis that was made at the mental health, at the county mental health where they did this, was really apropos. I really didn't feel like I had a chance. I told them what the problems were, mm-hmm. and then I told them that, you know, I'd really need that kind of assistance. And the psychiatrist that I got after all of this other violation stuff that had happened, the idea that they were, you know, wanting to give me medication and stuff like that without me even, you know, saying, well, I don't have a psychiatrist or any lawyer to discuss this with. So my concern is I believe metaphysics has strength and it has power. And I've been connecting with some of the people who are involved with, you may be familiar with, the California Mental Health Clients Network. Mm-hmm. And I found out, too, that they are centered in Los Angeles with a program that's called the Turnaround Program, which I had just started hearing about. And I'm very excited about it because they're beginning to look at some Chinese medicine and offering it at a very low cost. And I'm just really excited because I think on Monday I'm pretty much wanting to go find out what that's all about.
Well, it sounds like something that you need to follow. Certainly, I'm not in any kind of a position here.
Mm-hmm.
To make any comment on what, you know, they do with the mental health department.
Right.
They have a lot of bureaucratic rules that are established, usually based upon some very strong evidence of behavior patterns that they've had to deal with in the past. By and large, though, they're very dedicated to the idea of helping. But it is a very gray area about who they're helping quite often. And... But you do need to follow those inward feelings that you do have. So check that out.
I do want to say that it was a positive experience, and that which was positive about it enabled me to see what was particularly heartbreaking and hurtful in a lot of sense. But it also gave me the desire to continue to see what was happening. In a sense, I've always had interest in investigation and research. And with the work that I have done up to this point, it seems to me that I'm taking the steps. But I would like to leave you with this. One of the things that I feel that we can concentrate on a whole lot in terms of dealing with the mental health field is what would it be to provide alternative health opportunities in the hospitals so that people, when they go to the hospitals, can utilize the experience that would best fit their own needs rather than being told what to do?
Seems to me that it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And you see that happening more and more, not only in mental health, but in physical health as well.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate your show, and thank you for being an open channel in the community.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that comment.
All righty.
We're 17 minutes past 11 o'clock Saturday night. It's Open Mind, Open Forum. Bob Monroe, our guest for the first 2 hours, succumbed to the flu bug and had to get back in bed. But it was 3 o'clock in the morning in Virginia from where he was speaking to us. I'll be back with you in just a moment. Dick Supton's organization out in Malibu certainly has it for you. Kurt, you're on.
Hi, Bill. Kurt here. I was wondering if you were familiar with a book called Extraterrestrials Among Us, written by George C. Andrews, author. Do you know of this man, gentleman?
No, I don't. There are so many books on the UFOs, I just haven't had a chance to go through them all, although there's a shelf in my library at home that is going to take off and fly one of these days, I think.
Well, this particular book, I read a lot of books on UFOs, and a lot of them are quite fascinating, but this one here happens to be one of the most... This one here kept me on the edge of my seat. It's the most fantastic book I've ever read on the subject, I believe. It goes into... oh, geez, the ugly part of it, the animal mutilations, the... even human mutilations.
When was it written?
This was just put out, I believe, let's see here, 1985-86.
So it's a relatively new book.
Yeah, it's George Andrews, the Llewellyn New Times. It's a kind of like a paperback, but a very expensive one.
I don't know how I missed it.
Well, I did have never noticed it before, and I was out a month ago, and I saw several copies at a bookstore in West Hollywood. So I
will try to run that down and perhaps include him March 7th when we have our UFO show, UFO Update, the evidence.
I see.
And kind of rehash and bring forth basically what the government is saying, and we'll try to get some of the information, in fact, on cattle mutilations, although it's a little difficult to call those mutilations. As we've said before, some of the doctors at Cedars-Sinai Hospital would love to have those kind of surgical skills.
That is correct. What this book says, a lot of the cases he brings up are astounding. What most people don't realize are these mutilations, these cattle were not cut in a standard way. Not just like when you cut through, through hide. This was done between the cells. These cuts were made between the cells where these cells were not even... It was done in such a manner that no technology on Earth could do such a thing.
That's correct.
Between the cells. I've never heard of anything like that before.
And why
like a laser device.
Why that name mutilation was attached to that particular phenomenon or activity is more than I can understand.
And the blood taken from the animal was done in such a way that the veins did not collapse.
Mm-hmm.
It was as though it was sucked out through some unseen force, and just about every drop of blood in the body was removed, and no evidence of footprints, no helicopter landing tracks, nothing, except at one point they did find a U.S. Army scalpel at one site, which they found mysterious. And a lot of these mutilations take place on military, near military installations, which is another odd thing.
Well, they kind of happen all over.
But it does point out that a majority of them do take place near military installations, which seems astounding that they would either know of it or you know, it seems like they would be aware of what's going on in their territory with radar and such.
Sounds like a great book. Where did you find that book?
I found this book at the Bodhi Tree.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And so I just wanted to bring that up to you. And also I was going to ask you, in the future, are you going to have Colonel Wendell Stevens on again?
If we can ever get Wendell free enough to spend some time with us, we will. It's kind of difficult to do that right now.
Uh-huh.
But hopefully in the near future we'll be able to.
Okay, Bill. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad I gave you this information.
Well, I'm certainly glad to have it, and I look forward to getting that book.
And you take care and on that. I love your show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
All right. KABC time now is 19 minutes past 11 o'clock. It's an open forum. We have some open lines if you want to talk about any of the topics that we have. We were talking out of body earlier with Robert Monroe, but he's back in bed, sleeping off the flu, down in the Long Beach, San Pedro area. Rory here. Hello, Rory.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I'll relay an experience to me with you. I was an associate producer at a commercial production company here in Hollywood, and one of the directors I used to rep, he was 13 Clios, 6 Emmys, he was a pretty famous guy.
I've heard about him just recently. He's in the Los Angeles area.
Well, maybe he came here. He's from South America someplace.
Yes, South American man. I understand he's in the India area now, and he can do these strange paintings and do them very quickly.
Very quickly, right. And the most amazing one was that he had like a crayon in each hand, and he did two heads exactly opposite, going opposite ways from each other on the paper, real quick and perfect. And they look just like as if Van Gogh had done it, you know. So, but the thing I was going to say is, so my Carl invites me out to his house one time for a kind of a reincarnation gathering where people came dressed as character of people they past lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not really, I can believe those things exist, but I'm not somebody who really studies it. So I sat down in the afternoon and I thought about, well, gee, if reincarnation really did exist, I've been trying to figure out a costume. So I ended up going as a spaceman. And I'll tell you why. I go to this party, and these people were all doctors in metaphysics, which I don't know how you get a doctorate in metaphysics.
Neither do I, but...
They were all... There was 20 of them in a room, right? So they all get up, and they proceed to say, well, I was a samurai's daughter in the 12th century, or I was... They were all had rather elaborate... tales of, and they were usually upper crust people, you know what I'm saying? They usually had rather elaborate previous lives. And I got up and I said to them, you know, I was thinking about this, and the part that really that I don't believe about the reincarnation is that every time I see it on television or I see people living these things, they usually were, most people were peasants. I mean, most people, you know, at one time, most of these people would have been peasants. And second thing, I would have thought you would have been from another galaxy. I mean, I would have thought that, you know, and I have a question with that, is supposedly whatever lessons you didn't learn in this life, somehow you go and go to the perfect situation somewhere in eternity someplace, and you're plopped down to try to learn those lessons this time, kind of thing. And I would have thought that, you know...
I think it's a little more to it than learning lessons. It is evolving.
Evolving, right.
Which is a great deal more.
Right, okay.
Than just that.
But you would have to be, it seems to me that in order for the universe to work, you'd probably have to be zapped someplace that was the perfect situation for you to evolve in, and which might lead one to believe that the universe is infinite and there are infinite possibilities. But the point I was going to make is I would have assumed that why is it people, when they recall previous lives, they're never creatures from other planets and they're never peasants?
Well, that's not necessarily the case. Dr. Frank Baranowski, who's probably done as much of this work as anyone I know of working out of the University of Arizona there, Mesa, most of the thousands and thousands of people that he has regressed are just common, ordinary people. He always gets a little bit skeptical whenever they come across as some personage of some notoriety.
Uh-huh.
Not that hasn't happened from time to time.
Uh-huh.
In Dr. Baranowski's research, though, whatever you tell him, as another person in hypnotic regression into it, a past life, doesn't mean anything other than that you're a great storyteller until the researchers then can establish in some form or
verify
other that person did exist. Now, when that's done, if it's at all possible, we have what we would call a solid case. And most of the people that he regresses are just the farmers and the workers that have existed throughout time.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And why is it that they never seem to be from other planets or anything?
That's not the case, too. There have, in Frank's case, there are people that have said that that's where they are, and that's where they came from, or that this is the life that they're relating.
Uh-huh.
That, of course, is something totally uncheckable.
Right, right.
We can't get to the files of the other planet.
Right, right. Okay.
So that's just a story to tell.
Let me add one last question. Have you ever been hypnotized?
Yes, Dr. Baranowski did.
How much below conscious state did you feel you were?
Well, we went through some imaging, and then I remember seeing for the first time in my life an aura around somebody, and it was around Frank. And then I don't remember anything else, but I do have a recording of this marvelous story I told.
Uh-huh. Because I saw, you know, I was hypnotized once down here at one of these hypnotist places. A guy who was supposed to be real good. And to me, maybe I wasn't open to it. I tried as hard as I could, but I just felt maybe relaxed but not hypnotized. Now, I saw Melanie Rogers on television do a bit, and she seemed very... You know, either she's a great actress, which could be, but she seemed believable. And I've always wondered when I see these people get hypnotized, I say, wait a minute, I did this, and I just felt like very relaxed. I didn't feel like subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you, did you, you saying you did feel subconscious, or you did go into some kind of subconscious.
I just went blank.
You went blank?
I have no memory of it. I remember seeing the aura around the hypnotist, which was Dr. Baranowski.
Yeah?
And then I remember waking up just instantly later. However, about an hour or so had transpired.
So it did work. So it does work. It just didn't work on me. But you do. Okay.
I don't think you can be hypnotized unless you want to.
Right. Even though maybe you're trying, but maybe your subconscious won't let you.
Consciously, you say, "Hey, I want to be hypnotized," but subconsciously, you're saying, "Hey, I don't want that man invading, you know, my terrain." And you do make yourself a bit vulnerable there when you allow yourself to be hypnotized.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much, sir.
All right. Thank you for checking in with us.
Okay.
And Lisa, you're on.
Hi. You know, you talk about so many interesting things on the show, and I was reading in the Holistic Press that you're going to be speaking at the Whole Life Expo in February.
I certainly hope to be.
Great. Well
there's a panel there that we'll all be discussing. I'll be moderating a panel.
You'll be moderating the panel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is like Andre Puharic and...
Andrea will be there. I think Peter Hercos is going to be there. There's quite a group of people that Paul Andrews and his group have put together to be out there. And really some top-flight people who I think you can have a lot of confidence in the research and, you know, their experiences and what they have been doing.
So that's great. So then I would be able to ask questions there, too? Or
that's the name of the game.
Oh, terrific.
You don't learn anything unless you ask questions.
Now, are you going to be also speaking, or moderate?
I don't know whether I'm going to give one of my famous impromptu little talks or not. I thought I would just be moderating a panel. That has still kind of got a gray area in it, depending on my schedule, but we're going to make every effort to be there.
Well, I certainly look forward to meeting you. I really enjoy your show.
Well, I look forward to seeing you out there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. And, Mark, you're on.
Hi, Bill. How you doing? I've heard you about over the last 3 or 4 years. All I see, you always have this problem about getting out of your body, and I've always wanted to call you, but I never have done it. And I finally did it tonight because I've done an exercise that I did about 10 years ago that worked, and you've probably heard about it. Maybe you haven't. And have you ever heard of a Damien Simpson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe you probably know about this, but anyway, I had a class with him, and what I did was you lay on your back. And you through your voice, you raised up with your knees and your chest, and you spoke your name. And what you did was you kept doing this, speaking your name until it sounded comfortable to you. Because with you being on the radio, you're probably already kind of used to your voice. But for somebody like myself, it sounds very foreign when you call your own name. And I kept wanting to, you change the pitch, you know, until you feel comfortable with the sound of your name. And I think I did. Supposed to be something, you know, that soothes you or something, because to most people it sounds very, very, very odd to hear your own name sound, but, you know, with your own voice.
I don't know. I've been saying my voice for so many years that I do feel like I'm comfortable with it.
Well, see, that was my one concern, is because maybe you've heard yourself for so long over the radio, just, you know, listen to your recordings because you're in the business. Maybe it wouldn't quite work for you. But I'll tell you what, it worked for me, wham, bam. It was just, there's just no doubt about it.
Is that the only time you went out, Mark?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it wasn't. Actually, it was his secretary, was my brother's wife,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling me about it. But I got real scared and went back to him later. I said, man, can anything happen to you? You know, I was worried about getting back in like everybody else is.
Well, according to Bob Monroe, who was on with us a while here, no, nothing's going to happen to you.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what he told me. That's what was relayed to me, that nothing happened. But I never have done it since, and I don't know why I didn't. But I tell you, Bill.
You know, if I could do that.
But, you know, it does sound.
I have a lot of things I want to check out over there.
Yeah, you know what? It sounds pretty logical it would kind of feel like it would draw it out of you, because by going up and down like that, it almost feel like somebody was calling you, wouldn't you? Could you kind of like see the logic behind that type of exercise?
Well, I don't know. I've almost made it a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the rushing starts and I get so excited that I wake up.
Well, you know what happened? I'll tell you.
Dog barks or something.
I forgot about the movement. I didn't know if I was still going up and down, but I was still yelling my voice, not yelling, but still saying my name. And then all of a sudden, I just didn't remember anything until, yeah. You know, I went up to the... before I leave, I just got to tell you that I think my wife and my daughter, we finally saw a UFO.
Whoa.
I was, you know, but one, I believe, I knew I had the thing they were around, but, you know, you just don't know until you see one. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, it was probably about a 7.
Okay, where was it?
It was... there's a place in just outside of Fresno where they raised these boats, these water boats, as a river, and we were all laying back, looking at the stars. And I found out later that it was a proverbial cigar shape where they have all kinds of lights that are in a real irregular shape, but it's oblong. And what was really strange about it was that each light that were on this thing or whatever was the same intensity as the stars. So, and what this thing did, it just came kind of at us. And then just kind of whooshed across the horizon there and just kind of left. But what's strange about it is if it was close, we should have been able to hear it or something.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. But if it was, the thing was just had to have been huge, because I would imagine you could probably put, and there were some airplanes we saw that night.
You know, probably, the difference between an airplane and the others.
Yeah. You know, somebody else that works for JPL, these guys with these logical minds saying it was probably a formation flying. You know, I said, well, it's kind of an irregular formation as well. You know how these Air Force pilots are. But
yeah.
There was no doubt in my mind. All three of us saw it. We saw it for about 15 seconds, and it was really eerie, you know, just finally say, Jesus, what was that, you know?
I think it's very interesting about the people who work for the aerospace firms. I have talked to a number of them, and there is a loosely knit group of these aerospace engineers who have been assimilating information that they all get from their different firms and projects that they're on, and have come up with a pretty good story about the reality of the UFO themselves.
Really?
We have a young man in the studio here who just happens to be my son, who just happened to have been up near Fresno. Sounds like the same
damned.
Place, and just happened to have seen the same thing you saw.
I'll be darned. You know, that thing...
My son has seen a UFO. I haven't.
Really?
Have you gone out of body yet, Ross?
Yeah.
He hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, I tell you, but that was for sure. Like I said, the next best thing would be maybe standing underneath one or something, because I tell you, that was pretty... To me, it convinced me, hey, you know, there is something out there, because there's just no way that could have been anything else. It was must have been about... And there must have been probably 14... little stars or lights, whatever you want to call it, equidistant from each other, but it was in a real irregular shape, very oblong.
If you talk to somebody from the Air Force, it's probably a bunch of swamp gas.
Yes, that's it.
Yep.
You know. Anyway, Bill, listen, one of these days, really, you might want to try that, because I'll tell you what.
Yeah, listen, I'll
really
try anything.
Works.
I'll go lift my knees and say my name
and just,
try not to feel silly.
Yeah, and, well, you know, nobody around, and really, this is what he taught a class, this was like 10 years ago, and he taught this class, and it was only a very few... Very, very few people. He would do like maybe 3 or 4 people at a time. Because back then, I think it was a little bit more off the wall than it is nowadays, wouldn't you say? 10 years ago?
Well, I hope so. I thought the first night I did it, it was so off the wall that nobody was, didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And then I found out everybody in town does it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that night.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Bill, and it's always been a real good show.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Mark. We have some lines open if you want to get in. It's just a general discussion of the things we talk about on Open Mind. In the Compton, Lakewood, Long Beach area, 639 Talk, South Bay, you're...
Is what is, will be, what will be, was. So now I'm stumped. Where does thought come from? Why does it come to me, not to the other guy? Because, for instance, I predicted the... A Japanese war ending without any invasion. I predicted the German army annihilation at Stalingrad. People went on the stage, walked across. I told them exactly what their profession was and so forth. I've gone through all that, but the only thing that really stumps me is where does thought come from? Why does it come to some people, not to others? For instance, I'm not even Jewish. I keep thinking I was a Jewish rabbi, chief Jewish rabbi in past life.
You almost sound Jewish to me. Like you almost have a little Jewish accent there.
Well,
but you're not Jewish.
That's an Eastern accent. That's
an Eastern accent.
Connecticut.
You mean the kind of just the
Connecticut
talk.
Accent.
You were talking, you were talking about some precognitive things in one sense of the word. Some people just have a precognitive ability that they're able to tune in on or break down the time-space continuum. I mean, it's a part of the function of the mind. We went through this when Peter Hurkos was here the other day. Or are you asking about just the thoughts? Like, I'm getting thoughts now, which no one else is getting.
Certain thought come to certain people, not to others?
Well, I have an idea that the precursor to a thought... And a thought produces energy around us, but a precursor to a thought, if I could use some of the vernacular of my good friend Dr. David Liscott, is feelings. And that feeling is the thought, if you will, of your spiritual being, your spiritual intelligence, the very basic fundamental part of you. Now, that seems to be triggering the biological processes that we call thought. And they would come to you simply because they are very individual to your own spiritual intelligence.
Well,
does that help you?
I run into infinity. Every time there's an answer, there's always a question arises. Keep right on going.
Okay.
And then I run into infinity.
Right.
Is that right?
You certainly would.
because why are some people are chosen to have... their instrument to be used for that thought, become inventors, become so and so. I went so far as reading everybody's aura, and sometimes people are scared of me. I see them just like x-rays.
Well, I think we all have a different purpose that we're here to achieve, in the grand scheme of evolvement of our individual selves.
That's
and
right.
So we all are going to be different babes in the woods.
That's why when I listen to Religion on the Line, every time they use the word atheist, I burn.
Mm-hmm.
I want to call them and give them hell, but
because
we don't have the same image as they do of God, they call them an atheist.
Well, they
have no right to call anybody an atheist. There's no such thing as an atheist.
They have their own set of values, and
that's
and
right.
Fine.
And they measure everybody else by their values.
Right.
So nobody knows where thought comes from.
I feel it comes from your spiritual intelligence.
Well, that has another question. Where does that come from?
That probably came from the Creator.
Well.
And where did the Creator come from?
Well, then the Creator was beyond him. You know, he keeps.
Why are we dealing with those things, whatever they're. Other things of more import to where we are now to be working with and wondering where the Creator came from.
Speaking of auras, I'm glad you... I don't know if you can learn to read auras, but I thought maybe it's a gift, you know. Well,
I think some people have the ability to see those higher levels of perception. Obviously, they do.
Uh-huh.
And there is a lot that can be said about your aura. And
yeah.
That in terms of who you are and your physical being and other aspects of your being.
Well, it's very interesting. But everybody
stuff.
Has an answer, but not necessarily the answer.
Isn't that the way it is?
Well, I appreciate your program. I hope you put on some more of devices like, say, a tangible.
All right. Good. Maybe we'll have something for you kind of special next week.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Dennis, for joining us. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind. It's KABC. You're on.
Oh, hi, Bill Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very curious about metaphysical healing. I've had at least one out-of-body experience in my life. I'm 38 mm-hmm. years old. I've been used as a channel several times in my life, and mm-hmm. I've been able to alter my life with thought processes, and I know the stuff works.
Yes.
I picked up a book called The Miracle of Metaphysical Healing. I have a mother that is diabetic and in great need of physical healing, and I'd really like to, if you can tell me as much as you can about how it works, just what it is.
If I could answer that question, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Is that right?
I would be teaching it somewhere. To everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But there are energies that we all possess. We're beginning to understand the dynamics of those. In fact, Robert Monroe was talking about that a little bit earlier today, that people are able to do this. There are psychic healers, they call them. That this is not just stories now. I mean, they have been photographed, and we see them doing some things that are very, very, very strange. There are different electromagnetic forces that some people can have in their hands, for instance,
mm-hmm.
which can do things that are out of the ordinary in the context of how medical science views it.
Has
they don't understand it necessarily, but as Bob talked about, do you really need to understand it? The question is, does it work?
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's a placebo of some kind and you just want to be healed, like the old faith healers, it doesn't make any difference. If you're healed, you're healed. And, you know, that's the name of that tune.
Mm-hmm. I see.
There are a number of people that seem to possess this ability to some degree here in the Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm.
Just where you would find them, I don't know. But, I hear of them and I know they're around. Of course, it is... policy of mine, certainly a lady, I can't recommend any of these people to you. That's not our function.
Yeah, I understand that. Is it basically, what I'm finding in going through the book, is basically the same kinds of things that I've been able to use in altering, my life in a positive way, and,
mm-hmm.
and as far as positive affirmations, visualizing, using the TV screen of my mind to visualize things the way that I want them.
But we are the way we think.
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking about earlier, we are sort of a physically or a reflection of what we are spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement in this holistic area is to get your thought processes to the point that you were controlling your physical being rather than it controlling you, which is a lot easier said than done, of course, in the world that we live in when we've been, I think we've been taught to let the tail wag the dog.
Yeah, and that's very well put.
And therein is where we're happening. And I think the people that are involved in this kind, this different approach, this alternative approach to healing, are certainly understanding of that and are helping you. They're not doing the healing, actually, you are.
Mm-hmm.
But they're aiding you in that process.
So could you say then that if we are, if we grow up in an environment where all around us are signs that a certain illness is terminal,
mm-hmm.
We watch movies and the person with cancer starts off in the beginning and at the end of the movie he dies tragically and all of that.
Well, that's certainly feeding the computer with that information.
Exactly. So if our environment was different, would not the end result be different?
Well, I think that we do a lot of things in the environment that give us little post-hypnotic suggestions all the time. You know, Mother said, don't stand in front of the window there because you're going to catch a cold. Guess what? You're going to catch a cold. There's no reason to catch a cold standing in front of the window other than the fact that you were taught that that would happen to you.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Hmm?
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right. Good to have you aboard. And we have Suzanne.
Yes, hi, Bill. I have a comment in regards to the gentleman who was not just speaking, but the one before, on he said he didn't know if you could teach how to see aura, and I do. So I thought I'd give him, and your audience and yourself, a couple of hints if people are not already seeing aura and are interested in it. When I was 3, I left my body for the first time, and when I
you
came
did
back...
too, huh? You got 30 seconds.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, first look at the full moon. You have to know what you're looking at and see the glow around it. And that's what you're going to look at around any living thing or a person. Hold your hands up, your fingers pointing on each hand towards each other, your index fingers, and sort of hold it up against a solid color wall and just stare at the space in between it and pull your fingers far apart and close together and just keep practicing that and see if that can help you a little more.
All right, that sort of elevates your own consciousness to where you can pick up those vibrations.
Yes.
Thank you, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. We'll give that a shot.
Okay.
Richard, we won't have a chance to get to you. I'd love to talk about the Soviet tinkering with the weather, but we just ran out of time. We'll discuss that the night that we talk about Soviet Star Wars, February 28th. Join us here. Next week, something special for you, so join me then. I'm Bill Jenkins. Happy holidays.
KABC Talk Radio 79.